President Biden, when he came into office, especially after the war started in 2022, he just said, you know, we're going to crush your economy. We're going to devastate it, destroy the ruble, and you're going to collapse, and you're not even going to be able to continue to wage the war. And to that, Putin responded with this.
Despite all attempts to corrode our Russian society from within, our opponents are achieving no result. But on the contrary, they are getting the effect opposite to what they expected. And the fact that young people have such an internal protection from any attempts to influence public consciousness from within, this is very good. This speaks to the maturity and solidity of Russian society.
If you trace back to Trump's pivot on Ukraine, it came right after his state visit to the UK, to Britain. And Britain's really been making this case that Ukraine is actually doing much better than it is in the fighting, that Russia's been, you know, it's on its back heels, it's on its knees, that Russia's just very close to just being, you know, the regime is very close to being delegitimized, the economy is very close to collapsing. Of course, they've been saying that for 2 or 3 years. And then the Americans usually adopt this same strident rhetoric. And I think he was sold this narrative, resold it during his trip to the UK. And British intelligence probably showed Donald Trump some facts, some figures, maybe a PowerPoint presentation, who knows, or somebody who he really respects or has, you know, admiration for, delivered the line to him that we just need to hang in there a little bit longer, Donald. Look at all this drone tech that we have. We're going to swarm the Russians with this new drone tech. Operation Spider's Web was nothing. Wait till you see what we've got next. Now, they have been hitting refineries in Russia. The number of Russian refineries have been taken offline because of drone attacks from Ukraine. But you know what? You know where this is going to lead. At some point, there is a breaking point that Russia has where they're saying, okay, at that point, we're going to take out the entirety of Ukraine's fuel infrastructure. We're going to put you into fuel poverty if you continue this, and then we'll see what happens on the battlefield. That's where it's headed. And that level of escalation, when you start getting into that level of escalation, or they start then, Ukraine starts hitting deep into Russian territory or using attackums or God forbid, Tomahawks, Storm Shadows and whatnot, then it's going to be, and Russia has said, we're going to retaliate and hit the source of the threat. The source of the threat, if it's in Romania, if it's in Poland, if it's somewhere in Europe or even in NATO territory, as they like to call it. They like to call it NATO territory, as Jan Stoltenberg famously coined. Then what? Then what? Then we're going to be dragged into, they could drag us into Transnistria and Moldova. All they have to do is stage some kind of a provocation to draw Ukraine into Transnistria, and then all of a sudden, the whole thing is inflamed again. And that's one thing we've been warning about. We filed some really good reports on this topic maybe a couple weeks ago, and we're warning about what might happen after the elections in Moldova if Maia Sandu wins, the pro-EU, pro-NATO candidate, and of course she did. And so now we have the scene is set for potentially another front being opened up here. And that would be the mechanism by which Zelensky would then go back to Washington, and the press, you can imagine the free-for-all and the chest puffing and backslapping when the press and the entire bureaucratic elite in the West get behind this new front in Moldova. Then they're going to be the money, the weapons, give Zelensky whatever he needs. And we're going to be back to 2022 again. And so, and then how long is that going to last at that point? And what will be the cost of that? Where is it going to lead us? So, I mean, that's the danger of escalation is you could easily open up one or two more fronts in this conflict.
And along those same lines, we were talking about the economic warfare against Russia, which Putin said there, you know, we've completely weathered and we haven't collapsed from that. But one of our viewers here, Roman O, he says, everybody knows I'm all for Russia, but the sanctions are working in some ways. Mm. Obviously, he would say that in public, but me personally, I'm actually seeing it in reality. Is there a risk there that if the sanctions and all these things that we're doing actually start to really bite hard and actually hurt the Russian war effort, then that also could spawn a reaction of some sort that could accelerate on the battlefield.
Yeah, it could, and it most likely will. But I'll tell you this about the Russians. They're highly adaptable, highly adaptable. And if you think, look what they've done in economically, weathering the largest raft of sanctions in the history of sanctions. Since 2022, even before that, since 2014. So what they could do, all sorts of things. They could get into trading refined fuel with other countries, and then, you know, Ukraine would have to attack another country in order to stop the refinement process. I mean, there's a lot of things Russia can do. They have the resources, they have the raw material in the form of oil and natural gas. They can trade. So they have a lot. They will adapt. Russia will adapt and overcome. They have the capability to do that. Ukraine doesn't, and quite frankly, Europe and NATO don't. They don't have that level of adaptivity because their hands are tied with a completely fake and inflated economy, with the relative purchasing power parity that are, you know, that makes things, you know, not affordable, makes nothing affordable in the West. But a lot of the things that the West are paying a fortune for are very cheap and doable on the Russian side, because they just have a better economy, and the state has a bigger hand in a lot of industries in Russia. So they're not driven by shareholder dividends. So it's a different equation.
So let's look at one other thing that's been in the news here lately, which could also potentially cause an escalation, and that is the potential use of the Tomahawk missile. We showed earlier, I think it was on Sunday, that the vice president publicly acknowledged that Zelensky had specifically asked for the Tomahawk missile. And for those who may not know, the Tomahawk missile, cruise missile, is something the United States has. It is nuclear capable. I think you mentioned that a minute ago. So it's a big risk just on its own merit, because if it's used, it's unclear. The radar signature doesn't know the difference between conventional or nuclear warheads, et cetera. That's one problem. The range is also substantially longer. Some versions go up to 1,500 miles, which is like 7 or 8 times longer than the ATACMS long-range missiles that we've already given them. So that could potentially, just on the numbers alone, could cause a problem. The vice president said, when asked, will we give it to him? He said, well, that's a decision the president's going to make. We'll see what's going to happen with that. Well, yesterday, Volodymyr Zelensky had kind of a coy comment when he was asked, where are we on the cruise missile issue?
Before this moment, we used on long distance targets, we used only our weapon, as you know. And after my meeting with President of the United States, yes, we will maybe have something more. I don't know. We'll see.
That little smirk there at the end, and you could see that he was in the middle of talking, and then he's like, oh, wait, I better not say that. I almost wonder if we're not going to give him some of those, or at least we told him we might. How do you read that?
He looked very disheveled and just completely wrecked, firstly, and then he apparently has been promised or has knowledge of something. So, but you know, we're back to the wonder weapons, Daniel, and they really believe that that's going to somehow change the tide of this battle. And Donald Trump himself said some incredible, outrageous things in the last couple of weeks that Ukraine, we're going to retake all of the Donbass regions for Ukraine and then go even further. What does he mean? Does he mean Crimea? Does he mean the Kursk region? Are they going to take Belgorod? I mean, what is he talking about? So, I mean, that alone is really reckless talk by the U.S. president, but it's typically vague with Trump. So I don't know whether to take all of that too seriously, because a lot of things have been promised under Trump in the last, you know, 9 months have not been delivered. A lot of the things that Zelensky was promised, a lot of things, threats he made, haven't come true. So they will continue to suffer. They will continue to struggle to get enough manpower to man the front lines as where they currently are in the conflict. That equation is not going to get any better for Ukraine, and Russia will continue to mobilize their society, their economy, and their industry. So I just don't see how unless it's about provoking Russia to hit back in a way that will elicit some kind of a grand response and grand summit and collaboration and coalition by the West.
Yeah,
like, well, i.e. World War III.
That we are not anywhere near prepared for that. So that would be a catastrophic bad calculation for us. But we don't have to wonder what the Russians think about this, because yesterday at Valdai, Vladimir Putin also addressed the Tomahawk issue.
Will this pose damage to our relations, where we see light at the end of the tunnel? Of course, using Tomahawks without direct involvement of the U.S. officers is impossible, which means a brand new stage of escalation, even between Russia and the U.S.
So he was referencing there that and Russia has really all the way through since Trump got inaugurated had, despite the differences, Putin often says, well, at least we have a negotiating partner in the United States. And I'm hopeful that because we're talking, whether it's Trump personally, personal meetings, phone calls, Steve Witkoff, et cetera. So he says that's all good and we can have work toward these things, et cetera. But now he's saying that there's a limit to that. And if you do these kinds of things, then now that's even our own relation comes into question. Is that something you're concerned about?
Well, I mean, I was concerned when Kellogg was popping off, you know, threatening to hit targets deep inside Russian territory just a week and a half ago. And J.D. Vance was sort of backing that up in a certain way. That's the vice president. So, but there's no discipline. This is the problem, is there on the U.S. side, there's no discipline or consistency. And that's a big problem. And I think it might even be their undoing in the end. So it's... I'm not worried because so much currency is put on the Trump administration in talk and making a big show and making big announcements and doing big sort of, you know, public relations splashes like the Alaska summit, ditto for the threats, but what are they actually prepared to do, you know, physically, in terms of making good on those threats? It's not clear. It's really not clear. You can't just make the problem with Trump is, and people in this Trump style of negotiations, is he really believes, at least his people believe, they're putting on a strong front, a show of force, and that if they make threats, that it increases their leverage in negotiations because we're America and we're strong. That's what I think they believe. But that goes against, again, thousands of years of academic and study and understanding of war, peace, negotiations of von Clausewitz. It goes against all of that.
Well, and
it's almost like they want to reinvent.
Specifically on this issue here, because if you're going to make a threat for something, it's got to be a valid one. Yet Jennifer Kavanaugh, who, by the way, we're going to have her on the show here in about 15 minutes, as it turns out. But she wrote something about the Tomahawk missiles that I thought it's very important to bring up during your show here, because she said, look, there's some very practical problems here. Gary, if you could pull that full screen up there, that's the one. She said Tomahawk missiles can be fired in three ways: from a guided missile destroyer, from Ohio, Virginia, Los Angeles class submarines, and using a new ground-based Typhoon system, which was developed by the U.S. Army. Ukraine does not have any of these capabilities. Thus, it kind of suggests what Putin said there, is that if they're ever used, then it's with the direct participation of the United States. And I don't think even Trump is going to want to get into a direct war with Russia over something that won't even affect the outcome on the tactical front. What do you think of that?
No, it's very similar to the Storm Shadow missiles as well. There's multiple ways that they can be deployed in terms of, you know, they could be fit onto certain aircraft. It could be that could launch from a third party country and then fired over Ukrainian airspace and then turn around again to land back in Poland or Germany or whatever. But the damage they can inflict and what they could do in terms of escalation is really dangerous. The ditto with this. So it would have to be the Typhoon system. That would be the only, if it's not coming from a U.S. destroyer or a submarine, because that is just, that's the big fat red line right there. So if that's the case, what does that entail? And I suppose they feel very confident that they can deliver that. The problem with some of these weapons, though, is we're giving weapons to Ukraine that if we do give them to Ukraine, or they're deployed in Ukraine and used against Russia, they're not going to be high end. They're not going to be the top of the line. they can't for various reasons, for the disclosure of technology, should they fall into Russian hands, should they land unexploded, and so forth. That was the case with other weapons that we've supplied Ukraine before. And so I think it's got a lot of problems attached to it. The other thing is, Israel is also delivering its old Patriot missile systems to Ukraine right now. I think they've sent the first of eight, the 30-year-old ones, the original Iron Dome batteries. They're now selling or giving to Ukraine. I'm not sure what the deal is there. So, but that's an act of desperation. Again, it's not top of the range. That's 30-year-old tech. What sort of modified Tomahawk system are they going to give Ukraine? It can't be top of the range. It just can't be. Yeah. So how is it going? And not only that, those missiles are, if they're the old ones, they're really slow.
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
it's when you're going up against Saddam's Republican Guard or a country that has no air defense, fine, you know, shock and awe. But this is Russia. It's not the case. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions with this.
There really are. And listen, I hope this stays in the academic realm, that we don't ever have to actually find out in practicality, because everything bad could happen because of that. But listen, we're going to have to cut it off there, because we got another show here coming up with Jennifer Kavanaugh. But we really appreciate you coming on, especially some of these observations you've made. We, again, will send people back to 21 Wire. I know you got some stuff coming out. You've already had some stuff come out. Then we recommend people go there and take a look at your Sunday Wire and other shows to see what you may have there. So thanks for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you, Daniel.
And we appreciate you guys too. And like I said, just in about 10 minutes from now, you'll be able to see a lot more about what Jennifer Kavanaugh has had to say on this Tomahawk issue, but also several other issues that you're definitely not going to want to miss. Thanks, folks. We'll see you in about 10 minutes on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.